tune out of the anti-white system and tune in to the pro-white system.
Welcome to the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Monday the 24th of August 2026, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at RadioAlbion.com. Well, I had a very enjoyable weekend out with members of PA Wales. We went to have a look at the castle at Abergavenny, a couple of other castles, a holy well, a priory, a museum at Abergavenny, had a nice meal at the end of it. There was 8 or 9 of us, I think, that were there. It was just a very pleasant day out with other ethno-nationalists. We have quite a few cultural activities that we get up to with PA Wales. At least once a month we go out to visit somewhere and investigate our heritage. And if anyone would like to join us on these outings, all they have to do is send a request in at the Patriotic Alternative website. That's patrioticalternative.org.uk. There's a section on there where you can send inquiries in, basically, if you want to join us. You just have to pass a telephone interview and then meet up with us at one of these outings. So if you are interested in finding out more about your heritage and visiting parts of your country, perhaps parts of your county that you haven't been to before, then you can always join up with Patriotic Alternative. And of course, it's not just in Wales. There are regions all over the United Kingdom that you can join up with. So we don't just make content here at Radio Albion. We also take part in real life activities with Patriotic Alternative. And you'll also notice that when we have our radio schedule at the Radio Albion website, we quite often use pictures that are taken from these Patriotic Alternative activities as a sort of way of advertising them. Obviously, it's good to listen to information and listen to a nationalist viewpoint on nationalist podcasts, but it's also good to build a community. It's not just about learning about things, it's also about applying the things that you have learnt and building the bonds that you have within a community so you can all help each other with that community. So if you're not already a part of PA and you are a British listener, then perhaps you should think about joining. Well, today I want to take a look at the Great Replacement Theory. And this is because there is a Daily Telegraph author who is essentially writing an attack piece on it, claiming that it's just a conspiracy theory. And he makes quite a few fundamental errors, basically, when describing it. I'm not going to get a chance to go throughout the entire article. I'll go through the salient points. It seems to be that he's trying to attack Tucker Carlson, who has recently spoken out against Jewish involvement in American politics. And he's also trying to attack Restore for being ethno-nationalist. And this comes from the Daily Telegraph, which is supposed to be a right-wing newspaper. So what is it doing attacking the Great Replacement and calling it a theory or a conspiracy, when it's quite clearly not just a theory or a conspiracy? Demographic replacement is a fact of life. And the journalist's name is Jake Wallace Simons. I have a suspicion he might be Jewish. I don't know for certain whether he is or not. And he basically talks about the invasion of Ceuta, which recently happened with Moroccans all going into that Spanish enclave in Africa, North Africa. And a lot of people pointed out that this may well have something to do with Israel. And he's, of course, saying that's a conspiracy theory. There's no evidence for that. But we do have these tweets from people connected with the Netanyahu government, suggesting that Moroccans might like to invade that part of Spain, essentially because they were critical of Spain saying, well, Israel shouldn't be in Palestine. And Israel's response was, well, Spain shouldn't be in North Africa then, should they either? And I think that's what these allegations are based upon. So there is some evidence for it. It's not just some sort of wild claim that Tucker Carlson is making. So that's the first part of the article. And then he gets into the details of what the Great Replacement is. He says, although its name might sound like an abstruse aspect of physics, in its most potent form, the Great Replacement Theory refers to the conspiratorial idea that mass migration is orchestrated by Jews to dilute the white race until it vanishes. Why on earth would Jews want to invest so much time and effort in this bizarre goal, you might ask? In the mind of the conspiracy theorists, the reasons are as multiple as they are laughable. Divide and rule white society, the deflection of anti-Semitism towards other minorities, revenge for the Holocaust, financial gain, and as Carlson claimed over Ceuta, Israeli strategic interests. So there's quite a lot to unpack there. Basically, the Great Replacement, it's not a theory, and it is about replacing white people. I mean, it says it quite openly in a United Nations document about something called replacement migration. And they were concerned that white people were not producing enough to replace ourselves, basically, in Europe. And their solution to that was something called replacement migration, which is effectively moving the people from somewhere that is overpopulated, like Africa, removing it to a part of the world where people are not producing enough to reproduce themselves, basically, which is what we have happening in Europe. So it's not a theory, it's not a conspiracy theory. It's a fact that we have replacement level migration going on in Europe. And that is what the UN asked for. That was the UN's solution to this fact that we're only producing something like between 1.2 and 1.6 children for every two people, basically. So we don't have enough of a fertility rate to actually replace ourselves. So this is what it boils down to. It's not an accusation that it's orchestrated by Jews. Some Jews advocate for this replacement migration, and I don't think that's denied by anyone that there are Jewish organizations that promote migration. And the Jewish logic for that is that they have very often been migrants themselves. They've been kicked out of countries. They've moved between countries. They've been refugees at certain times. So they claim that they have this sense of kinship with anybody who is a refugee, anybody who is a migrant. So they advocate for migrants' rights. Also, the more diversity you have in a country, the less likely Jews are to stand out. If you have no diversity in a white country and you just have white people and you have Jews, Jews are going to look different. And white people are going to notice that the Jews are a different group in their society. However, if you have lots of very dark coloured people in your society, they are more likely to stand out more than the white people in society. And the Jews are more likely to appear to be the same as the white people. So this is the reason, another reason, this is the sort of evolutionary psychology reason for why Jews like migration. It's because it makes things safer for them, because they're less likely to stand out. So you would expect Jews to promote migration into the countries where they are living because it is of benefit to them. So what are you saying here? Why on earth would Jews want to invest so much time and effort in this bizarre goal? Well, it's quite logical that they would, because they would rather live in multicultural countries. And there's good reasons for why they would want to do that. Now, we get to these other points here. To divide and rule white society. Well, there are white people that might want to do that. And if you look at, go back in history, for instance, and the Assyrians, the Assyrian Empire, they would take people from the lands that they had conquered and they would remove them to other parts of the empire to divide the nation. If you look at the USSR, what they would do is they would remove Russians from one part of Russia and they would stick them somewhere else in Eastern Europe. This is why we have Russians in Latvia, Russians in Lithuania, Russians in Estonia. And the reason for that is exactly what it says here, that it's easier to divide and rule because it makes it more difficult for a nation to get together and resist. It makes it more difficult for them to form a resistance against the government. So it's actually going to benefit some of these white people that are in the establishment to do this, because it makes it less likely that they're going to be taken down. The deflection of anti-Semitism towards other minorities. Well, I guess that comes under that first heading of meaning that Jews won't stand out quite so much. And we do see this, in actual fact. We do see people blaming the minorities for what's happening when it's not really the minorities' fault. It's our government's fault for allowing this sort of migration. So they're saying that this might be of benefit to Jews. Well, clearly that is going to be of benefit to Jews. So again, that is a reason why, or an evolutionary psychology reason why Jews would do that, because it benefits their group. Revenge for the Holocaust. Well, we do see, we have heard certain Jews talking about migration as being revenge for the Holocaust and serving Europe right if they're full of Islamists, and this serves Europe. Basically, it's just punishment for Europe and what Europe has done in the past. Also saying that it's just punishment for conquering America and conquering Australia and building civilization there. Financial gain, well, it does benefit the banks. And who is it that is vastly overrepresented in banking? Well, again, it is Jews. The financial gain isn't just that it lowers wages and makes it so that capitalists can make more money. It's also an essential part of the economic system that we have to generate more and more debt. We have to continually be generating debt in order for the system to actually function. And I've talked about this quite a lot. But I should repeat it because it is important, and we get new listeners all the time. With the banking system, it's not actually based on wealth. It's based on IOUs. When they create money, they don't take money from people's savings to loan it out, because that would be illegal, because that would be a risk, because that's somebody's savings that they've put with you, with the bank. When they create money, what they do is, when someone takes out a loan or a mortgage, the bank then writes an IOU, which is why cash has "I promise to pay the bearer the amount, this certain sum." And that's what money actually is. So the only way that money can come into existence is with people taking out loans. Now, this would be fine if there wasn't any interest, because the interest does not appear anywhere in the system. Because the interest doesn't actually appear anywhere in the system. So if you think about it, you've got zero funds in circulation, zero funds anywhere. Somebody says that they want to borrow £10 from the bank. So the bank monetizes that loan, hands out a £10 in cash, basically, and then tells the person that's borrowed it, well, you have to pay back 10% interest on that. Now, of course, there's only that £10 in circulation. So where is the £1 interest going to come from when there's only £10 in circulation? Well, that £1 interest comes from the next loan, because somebody else then takes out another loan for £10. They also have to find £1 interest. But now that that second person has taken out a loan, that means the first person can pay back his £10 that he's borrowed, plus he can pay back the pound of interest from that other £10. But now the second person has only got £9 in circulation with which to pay back his loan. So somebody else has to take out another debt. So you can see that it's actually built into the system that there must be massive amounts of debt. And because debt is used as collateral, buildings are used as collateral, it literally means that the banks own everything. Instead of countries measuring their wealth by what their country owns together, that you just have a national debt, and instead of owning things, everything gets sold off or used as collateral. So in order to have a continually expanding debt, you have to continually have expanding debtors. Now, there's two types of debtor. There is the individual that wants to borrow money for a business or whatever, And then there is the government that borrows money from the banks so that it can pay benefits. So whether somebody is working or not, somebody still has to create debt. They still create a debt, whether they are borrowing money from the bank to set up their own business or whether it's the government borrowing money from the bank to pay their benefits. The bank does well out of it, don't they? So the bank doesn't care, really, if these people that are coming into the country are going to work or whether they're going to be on benefits. It doesn't matter to them because it just means it's going to create more debt, which is what they want, because the more debt there is, the more the banks basically owe. So financial gain is, I mean, it's quite obviously a reason why we have to have this migration. And I've said before, if we do get a nationalist politician in power, they would have great difficulty at doing anything other than tinkering with things and making small changes around the outside. Because if you were to turn the spigot off and stop all the migration, all the financial organisations would freak out completely. And the cost of your pensions would go down. You'd get less pension money. Your mortgages would go up. It's essentially the same thing that happened when Liz Truss tried to make a few changes to the financial system. The markets got spooked. That's what we were told. And because the markets got spooked, everybody ended up owing more money and interest rates went up. And that's literally what the markets would do if someone was to say, we're going to stop all migration. They would say, well, you can't do that because the whole banking system is based upon that, which would cause the banking system to get spooked effectively. So these are the reasons why we have this migration. And it's not a conspiracy theory. And there's good reason for thinking these things. Now, what is sort of being alleged here is that Jews are doing this. I mean, it says here, as Carlson claimed over Ceuta, Israeli strategic interest. Well, it is in Israel's strategic interest to encourage migration to other countries and not encourage migration into its own country, because migration is going to weaken a country. I don't think it's hypocritical for Israelis to promote immigration to other countries. I mean, why would they promote it to their own country? The problem that we have is that we have white people that promote immigration into our own countries. It's not that Jews do it. As I just pointed out, there's good reasons for Jews doing it. Why would Jews do something that was not in their own benefits to do? It's not in white people's benefits to have immigration, apart from this, to keep this banking system going. But as he says here, it's also for Israeli strategic interest. Ultimately, he says, however, not too much thought is given to the credibility of all this. For the great replacement enthusiast, Jews are simply malevolent, and that is enough. As I've just pointed out, there are good reasons for people thinking these things. I don't think it's that Jews are malevolent. It's just that you do get a lot of Jews that promote immigration. And you might get the odd Jew that says, oh, well, it's good payback for white people. Let's replace white people. Let's wipe them out. You might get the odd Jews that say that, but I think it's wrong to claim that all Jews wish to do that. Then you've also got the fact that there's always been these allegations of Jewish conspiracy to take over the world. And then when you actually look at their religious literature, it says they are meant to take over the world. Now, Christian books tell us that Christians will inherit the world and that God will do that. Whereas in the Jewish books, they say, well, we are meant to be running the world and this is the way that we will take control of the world. So there is good evidence to show that Jews want to rule the world effectively. And part of that would be this great replacement. And of course, again, you're going to get accused of conspiracy theory for saying that. But it's not all Jews that are doing this. They're not all meeting up together and conspiring. It's just that instinctively, if you're a small group within a nation, you're going to do things which are going to weaken your competitors and strengthen your own group. And it's quite natural to do that. I don't think it's malevolent to do that. I think it's just naturally the way that the Jews are. They promote these things which weaken the nation that they're among and that cause them to be stronger together. It's like all of this fear that they have of anti-Semitism. I mean, that really serves to make the Jews stick together all the more. And one thing you cannot criticize Jews on is their ethnocentrism. ethnocentrism is a good example. It's the best thing about them is their ethnocentrism. The great shame is that as white people, we've lost this sense of ethnocentrism, and we go along with people's encouragement to lose it all the more. And this is where this problem with the Jews comes in, because people end up resenting Jews because they encourage this. But it's not really the Jews' fault that they're encouraging it, because they're only doing that because it's of benefit to them. The people that are at fault are white people for going along with it. Continuing with the article here, their supposed evil plot, that's the Jews' evil plot, was hyperbolically, and you shouldn't be using a term like hyperbolically. There is hyperbole, but there is no such thing as hyperbolically. Hyperbole is just adding loads of fluff, verbiose wordage, which is what he's actually doing there by using this term hyperbolically. It's a bit of a pet hate of mine when people use that. Hyperbole is the word that he's looking for. Their supposed evil plot was branded white genocide by the late American neo-Nazi David Lane in the White Genocide Manifesto, a screed he wrote in the 1990s while serving time in prison for his role in the assassination of an outspoken liberal Jewish radio presenter. Now, I have issues with this term white genocide because I don't think it's entirely accurate. When somebody kills themselves, you don't say it's genocide, you say it's suicide. And from what I can see, that's what's going on here. We have white suicide. We have white people taking actions which are harmful to the group, which are going to result in the extinction of the group if they're taken to their extremes. And it's actually white people that are doing this. We may say, well, there's Jewish influence in the establishment, but it's not all Jews in the establishment, is it? And it really doesn't matter what they do. What matters is what white people do, because you don't have to listen to Jews. Jews aren't holding a gun there, pointing at your head, saying you need to replace yourselves. I mean, we could quite easily say, well, we don't want to carry on with this immigration. I know we'd have difficulty with the economy, but then that's usury. And again, why have we got usury? Well, it's because greed of white people. They allowed Jews in. Kings allowed Jews in. Because when the Jews would die, all the money that they had collected through their money-lending practices, they went to the king. So it was of great benefit to the king to have Jews in the country, because he could expand his wealth by doing that, because the earnings from usury were seen as ill-gotten gains. They were immoral earnings. So when the Jew died, he wasn't allowed to pass them on, and they went to the king. So there was greed there by the king. And then even despite that, Jews were making so much money from the interest that they were adding that the Pope decided that what he would do is he would change the meaning of the word usury, because it always used to mean any interest whatsoever on a loan. And he changed the word usury to meaning biting interest, i.e. interest that was over 10%. And in that way, he effectively legalized usury. And then you had Christian banks and Christian banking organizations, as well as Jewish ones. And for this reason, our economy ended up being based upon usury. Now I've got a little bit off topic there. Getting back to this white genocide thing, it's also the reason why I don't really refer to it as an invasion, because it seems to me that these people that are coming here have been invited by our government. They're certainly not being turned away by our government. They're having the red carpet rolled out for them. They're being put up in hotels. They're being given funding. People that criticise their crimes are locked up in jail, not the people that are carrying out the crimes. They get paid money to go back, as was the case with that Ethiopian that sexually assaulted a girl in his town. And the white people that complained about it were given a 2-year jail sentence. The person that carried out the sexual assault was given a 6-month sentence. In actual fact, he was freed straight away, and then he was paid £500 to go back to Ethiopia, which I am told is about 2 years' wages in Ethiopia. So you can't really call these people that are coming over and being treated like that as invaders, especially not when our government rolls out the red carpet for them. And I don't think we can call what's going on here white genocide, because that implies it's other people doing it to ourselves. That effectively takes away our agency. It says, oh, white people don't have any agency. They can't make any decisions for themselves. And these forces outside of them, these Latinos and Africans, they're just so superior to the white people. White people can't defend themselves and it's a genocide. Well, that's obviously a nonsense. White people do have agency. We built all the world's civilizations. We certainly have the capability to resist this, but for some reason we don't. So it's effectively suicide. It's white suicide that is going on, not white genocide. It's not being orchestrated from outside the group. It's something that the group is doing to itself with encouragement by people from outside the group. I think this is the problem. People end up blaming the Jews for this. And if you're going to blame another group for it, it means that you've taken away your ability to put a stop to it. You need to take ownership of it. You need to say, we are doing this to ourselves. Therefore, now we can take steps to prevent it from happening because it's only us that are responsible for it. That's the way that it needs to be looked at. It needs to be framed in a different way. All the while people are blaming Jews for it. It's an insult to white people, really. It's saying we're so weak and pathetic. We just go along with whatever anybody else tells us to. Even when throughout history we've been warned against listening to these people. Continuing. According to Matthew Feldman, an authority on fascism and white supremacy, who has acted as an expert witness in Britain's most notorious far-right terror trials, and of course Feldman is a Jewish surname, part of the appeal of the Great Replacement Theory is its capaciousness, as it unites every minority into a single enemy, with Jews pulling the strings. Well, if it's replacement migration, then again, it doesn't matter what ethnic group they are. If they're not white people, they are replacing white people, aren't they? If they're being brought into the country. As I say, I don't think they should be seen as the enemy. It's the enemy within. It's this desire within our own people to effectively turn our altruism outwards instead of inwards. Pathological altruism is what Dr. Kevin MacDonald called it. You have this other word that Gad Saad has started using. I forget what it is, but pathological altruism is essentially the problem. We are such good people and we're such charitable people that we want to help everyone. And of course, you can't help everyone. You can really only help yourselves, and you need to help yourselves before you'd be able to help anyone else. I mean, the first rule of life saving is that if it's going to put your own life in danger, then you don't go out to try and do the life saving. You have to save yourself first. And because we're not doing that, we've literally become an enemy to ourselves. Part of our group is intent on not reproducing. It's intent on handing over our resources to our opponents. And it's those people that are the enemy within. If you want to use the term enemy, I would rather just see these other groups as our opponents, effectively, our competitors for the world's resources, rather than as an enemy. And I'm not saying that people on the right don't see all these other groups as enemies. A lot of the time you do see that kind of framing, but I don't think it's correct to use it, really. I think they're just competitors. They're not necessarily enemies. I don't think they necessarily actually really wish us any harm. They're just trying to do what's best for them. Of course, there are some with loud voices who do very loudly wish us harm, but that's not all of them. And even a parasite on its host doesn't actually kill its host. It relies upon that host. And a lot of these minorities rely on white people, effectively. All around the world, they rely on foreign aid and all these other things. So, and they relied on us for the civilization that we have created. So I don't think it's right to see them as an enemy. He says it's a very Protean idea, he says. It has been used to attack blacks, Latinos, Jews and Muslims. It's perfect for the racist, as it ties together everybody who isn't white, plus the Jews, in one grand poisonous concept. Well, effectively, everybody who isn't white is non-white. They are all effectively part of a group, aren't they? They're the world majority. They're not the minority, they're the world majority. They make up a massive majority. Something like 90% of the world is non-white. And it's not, and that's not tying everybody together in a conspiracy. I mean, even the British government does this. It refers to them as BAME, black and minority ethnic. Somebody who isn't white is either black or a minority ethnic. It's the government itself that ties everybody together who isn't white. It's nature that does that. Dave Rich, Associate Research Fellow at the Peirce Institute for the Study of Antisemitism, agrees. We've seen British neo-Nazis appearing on Islamist podcasts talking about the Great Replacement Theory, he says. The idea even has the ability to bring Islamists and the far right together in agreement that conflict between them is a Jewish trick. And this is interesting. I mean, I think when you talk to Muslims as an ethno-nationalist and a traditionalist, you can find that they have a lot of traditionalist ideas, particularly on women, and they're against feminism, they're against abortion, they're against LGBTQ being taught to children, they're against drag queen story hour, and they do like to live amongst other Muslims. They would far rather be living amongst other Muslims than be living amongst other groups. And that's essentially what an ethno-nationalist is. An ethno-nationalist wants to be living amongst his own group. So when you look at it like that, there are lots of things that you actually have in common with Muslims. The only disagreement would be on immigration of Muslims into Britain, effectively. Obviously, Muslims would like to live around other Muslims. If you were to say there's going to be no more Islamic immigration, and what we're going to do is we're going to put all you Muslims together in certain parts of the country, and you can have your Sharia law there, I expect they would be really, really grateful for that. I think they would be very, very happy with that. As I say, it's only the fact that more of them are coming in is this disagreement that we would have with them. Of course, some people might bring up the grooming gangs. That's a different issue, though, really. That's, again, evolutionary psychology. These people in their own societies, they might not get the chance to actually breed. So they've developed a tactic of gang rape, essentially, in order to pass their genetics on. And I get that from Dr. Edward Dutton, who's written extensively on this subject and the evolutionary reasons for it. And I think they are looked down upon in society. They certainly would be in the countries that they come from. They don't have this grooming gang problem there because women are always covered up, and they're either with their brother or they're with their husband. Whereas in Britain, you have young girls that are out unattended, and it's too much for some of these Muslim men to cope with, basically. And also you've got ones that are just generally very, very, very bad people. But in most cases, they would be seen as being bad people by the Muslim group. And if they were living on their own together, you wouldn't get this problem because they wouldn't have access to young white girls, young white children. The grooming gangs would not have any access to any victims. So for them to be living amongst their own people would be benefiting them the same as it would benefit us. I mean, it benefits anybody to be living amongst their own people. And then this author goes on to link this great replacement theory, as he calls it. Replacement migration is what it is. He then links it to various terrorist attacks as if because these people believed in or had noticed the replacement migration, anybody who also notices it is a supporter of terrorism, which is really a nonsense argument. And it is something that people see. We can see the demographic replacement taking place before our very eyes. It's not a conspiracy. It's not a conspiracy theory. It's a UN policy. It's an open UN policy to replace the people that aren't here with people from Africa. And it's rather like saying, well, these people that carried out these terrorist attacks, they also breathed air and they also drank water. Therefore, we shouldn't be breathing air and we shouldn't be drinking water. It's an argument that doesn't actually make any sense. And this, as I say, this article goes on for quite a long time. And that's essentially what it is trying to make out that it's just a conspiracy theory. I mean, he admits that there is this demographic change. He admits that people want it to stop. But he says none of this was part of a sinister plot to replace the white population, and it certainly had nothing to do with Jewish puppet masters. Well, that's not what the Great Replacement is. I don't think the Great Replacement implies anything about Jews. It's saying that there is a great replacement going on. There is a massive replacement of one population with another population. That's what the Great Replacement is. It's like people have tacked this Jewish bit onto it to discredit it. But I think when people refer to it, that's what they're referring to. They're not necessarily referring to the Jewish involvement. And by adding this Jewish involvement part to it, that's how they seek to discredit it as being anti-Semitic, because as he admits here, it can actually be, you know, you can see that this is going on. As I say, I'm not going to be able to finish all of that. It's there's quite a bit more in this article, but I think I've got most of what I wanted to talk about out, which is basically explaining what the Great Replacement actually is, as opposed to this projected straw man that our opponents try to say that it is. We've also had people on the left claiming that it is a good thing. Recently, there was a, I think it was a Spanish politician that said that the Great Replacement was a good thing. And I think we've had a French politician saying that as well. So it is admitted that this is going on. So this is rather late, really, to be claiming that it's a conspiracy theory. And you do have to wonder what it's doing in a supposedly conservative newspaper like the Daily Telegraph. Well, thank you very much for listening. I'll be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.